Welcome to Catholic Messenger Conversations Podcast. Today's conversation with Question Box columnist Father Tom Hennen celebrates a recent milestone. Drum roll, please. 100 Question Box columns for the Catholic Messenger. Father Tom is pastor of Sacred Heart Cathedral in Davenport and our diocese vicar general, but still manages each week to write insightful responses to Catholics' questions about our faith. So
Almost every week.
So we plan to talk about his column and his roles as pastor and vicar general. Let's get the conversation rolling.
Okay.
Are ready? Okay, first of all, thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. My pleasure.
Okay, Father Tom, what led you to your role as Question Box columnist?
Really, the encouragement of a few friends, close friends. I think when we had the syndicated column for the Question Box before, and then he passed away, and then there was this gap where we didn't have a Question Box in there. And so I like doing this kind of thing. I enjoy writing. I enjoy being able to exercise a little bit of teaching when I get the opportunity. And so some friends said, you should do that. And at first I kind of laughed about it and said, no, I'm too busy. I can't do all that. But then I kind of stewed on it for about a week and I realized, you know, I think I actually would like to try my hand at it at least and see how it goes. And so I just kind of started one and then the next and then the next and then the next. And then, of course, questions come in. And I tell people in some ways it's easier to write than my weekly bulletin column for the parish because I know what I'm starting from. I've got a good question already that I can answer, so I don't have to come up with, like, what do I want to write this week?
Oh, that's awesome.
But it is helpful. And my writing time is typically Thursday mornings after my 8 o'clock Mass. I will kind of tell the office staff, if it's an emergency, please get me. But otherwise, I'm locking myself in the office to get this done. But I've usually been stewing on it for a couple of days already.
Oh, that's awesome. So where do you get the questions that you answer?
So a lot of the questions will come to me by email. Either they're sent directly to the messenger and then you forward them on to me, or they'll send them directly to me. Some questions have come by letter. Some people will write a letter and ask their questions that way. Some questions aren't exactly made up, but I've created a question based on conversations that I've had with people on
good.
Topics
good
that I think might be timely or appropriate. And so I'll kind of craft a question out of that that I think would be helpful.
Oh, that's great.
But most of the time I've got at least a few in the hopper, and I do try to work through those more or less in chronological order as I receive them, because I know some people are kind of waiting for that response in the messenger, but not always. Sometimes I'll get a question about, you know, the date of Christmas right after Christmas. I'm like, well, I'm just going to save this for next Christmas.
Year, exactly.
So if it's something that has to do with something later in the year, I might hang on to it. I put it in my pending file, and I'll get to this one eventually.
Oh, that's great. How do you decide which questions to answer?
Totally selfishly, the ones that are interesting to me and the ones that I could do something with that, where I kind of get excited about it and I think, I think I've got a good way of kind of answering that in a way that's, that's interesting, but I also, like I say, people are writing these in. I don't think I've missed too many. If I've missed questions that were sent in, it was because someone is asking basically the same question, and I kind of mash those up a little bit and try to answer them in one fell swoop. But I do want to be respectful of the fact that people are sending these in. They're looking for an answer at some point. Hopefully they don't expect it the next week after they send it to me, but I will get it to them eventually. So just kind of whatever is interesting or whatever I think I have time for. The ones that require a little bit more research, I might say, I don't have time this week, but next week I'll take a good look at that one and work on that in between.
Oh, that's great. And what goes into the writing process? So you described a little bit of that.
Yeah. The first thing is I usually have to rephrase the question slightly. I try to use as much of their wording as possible, but I will try to shorten it because someone gives me a word limit.
Oh, no. Who would that be?
I'm very gracious, actually, that you – I think when I first started writing, you were like, 500 words. And I could, can I get 600? I think we bargained up to 600. I think I was asking
That's
for more
right.
than that. And there are some weeks I'll send it to you and I say, I know it's a few words long, but you usually find a couple of good ways to tighten it up a little
bit.
And I'm very grateful for that feedback. I really do aim for 600 words pretty much on the nail because I know that's what fits in the space and then it's consistent and that kind of thing. So that means sometimes I can't get to the whole of a question in one setting, so I will do a two-parter or something like that. Then some questions are easier to answer, and so I can maybe do two in one if I can. But I rephrase the question, and then probably like anybody else, I will start from what's on my bookshelf and, okay, what do I find out about this on the internet, right? You know, the thing is, anybody can look up any answer to anything in the day and age that we live in. So I'm usually just looking for, like, making sure I got my facts straight and checking a few different sources, but building on, you know, the personal knowledge that I already have a little bit. And then making sure if it's something with dates or something of when this happened or that happened. So I do a little bit of research that way. But then in answering the question itself, as you know, I try to make it kind of more of a conversational tone. Yeah. I try to make it humorous when I can or when I can work in a corny joke somewhere in there.
You do that well.
And people appreciate that. Again, anybody can look up anything online anymore. So if they're going to read this in a physical newspaper, they should be entertained a little bit, or they should find something in it. Like, you don't know what I'm going to do exactly, or you don't know what I'm going to say. And I've thrown some curveballs at some people sometimes too.
Well, and it makes it memorable.
Yeah.
That's what helps people remember a lesson you're teaching too, right? Yeah. And which
it's more fun to write too.
Exactly. So what are some of the more memorable questions you've addressed? Can you think of them?
I will say I'm maybe a little too proud of when I was answering the question about how the Pope is selected, and I had the thing in there about then they take this, you know, silver flechette of Antioch
throw
it at the dartboard, and of course that's total fiction. But, you know, I'm imagining the person reading it and like, what, they really do that? And I think I had a couple people fooled for a couple of seconds, and then they realized, just kidding, you know, that's not
right,
how it works.
Including me.
So I like those ones where I can be a little, you know, cheeky, you know. That's fun. But I don't know. There's a lot of them that are wonderful. And some weeks I just get one and I think, wow, that's a really good question. I do want to dive into that. A lot of liturgical questions come up, and I appreciate that. And those take some careful nuance, because sometimes, you know, the liturgy gives you options. But some people have in their mind, this is the only right way to do this, and other people, this is the only right way to do this. And actually, they're kind of both right, you know, sometimes.
Yes.
And so it's a matter of kind of teasing that out a little bit to say, this is the principle we're trying to uphold. This is why we do what we do. But you may also do this and this, and you're not wrong for doing that, you know, so those kind of things. But those tend to be the ones that are, I wouldn't say hot button exactly, but the ones that are probably, you know, people want a more definitive answer on. And I apologize if I have no, there are a lot of times I don't give a definitive answer, because there's maybe not on certain questions, certain questions to be sure, but on other ones there is more nuance there.
How do you handle the challenging, you've gotten some challenging questions. How do you deal with those?
I'm trying to think of some of the more challenging ones. I think
maybe like where the tabernacle.
Sure. Yeah. Like that's the tabernacle wars, right? Yeah. Well, where does that go? And yeah. So again, I am with those kind of liturgical questions. I'm always starting with like, well, okay, what does the church give us in its own liturgy in the general instruction for the Roman Missal? And so I'll start there. And can I say, this is what this document says, and these are the options it gives to you. Pastorally, you know, I might say, I think this makes sense in these circumstances or in these circumstances, like I've often said with that kind of thing. You have to look at your building and the architecture of the building, too.
That was a good one.
Trying to make a building into something it was not designed to be because of the era that it was built in doesn't usually make a whole lot of sense, right? And it's very noticeable when you do, because it looks jarring, you know. So I think, you know, a lot of it comes down to just, I try to say, here's what the church teaches, here are the options we have. And here's what makes sense to me personally. And if I can draw from my own past experience on dealing with some of those questions from a parish level, I will try to incorporate that too.
I think it helps so much that you are a priest and that you deal in liturgy every day.
Oh, sure.
Right? Yeah. And so people are more willing to accept the idea that there are also nuances in the way we approach.
And they're free to disagree with me too, which is fine. You know, they might be wrong, but they're free to disagree with me.
So, yeah, have you had readers question your response if anyone come up to you and say, hey, Father, I'm not sure I agree with that answer?
The only one that came up, I think, was pretty recently. It was
that
the
AI.
One on AI. And actually, the gentleman that wrote the letter to the editor, which was very nicely written, by the way.
Yes.
I know him. He's a former parishioner
of
mine.
Yes, I know.
His parishes, and have the utmost respect for him, and he's a wonderful, he and his wife are wonderful people. And so I didn't take any umbrage at that. I was like, he made a really fair point, which was, I was maybe... too quickly or painting with a broad brush, oh, AI is like other technology and we just have to learn how to use it and there's good uses of it and bad uses of it and things like that. And I think his point basically was like, this is kind of a whole different thing a little bit because of what this could potentially be. Again, I'm not sure I totally agree with that. I think this is something that we can use positively, that we can harness, that we certainly have to be aware of and, you know, have to educate ourselves on. But I took his point, you know. It's comparing apples and oranges to say that AI is just like this other technology or this other technology or this other technology. It's not quite that. But my point was we have come across a lot of these, like, technological revolutions over and over again.
Right.
You know? Writing is a technological innovation that changed our world forever. Books, the same thing, you know, that we can basically outsource our knowledge to these things that exist outside of our brain where we don't have to memorize everything. You know, that's so we've had some of these revolutionary changes in our technology and we'll navigate this one too. But and just as with those things, they can be used in some pretty ugly ways, right?
Right.
You know, and some hateful ways and some ways that tear down instead of build up. And so we've got to be careful how we do that.
That's been in the Bible for what? Gazillions of years, right?
So I had a follow-up conversation actually with a professor from St. Ambrose University about that, a philosophy professor. And it's really stuck with me from that conversation because we were talking a little bit about AI and that article and what the Vatican had put out on that, the one document they have on it. And he was saying, I'm less worried about computers thinking like humans. I'm more worried about humans thinking
like computers. Yeah.
Like, that is brilliant.
That's really
profound. Insightful.
Yes, exactly. So how often do you have people approach you and say, hey, I've got a question for you for the question box? I bet you get that.
Quite a bit. And if they catch me after Mass or in passing, I will say, please email it or write it down or send, because I will not remember in the moment, you know, what it is. So send it to me somehow. And then I'm kind of old-fashioned in the sense that when I get one of those, I still like to, like, print it out, and I put it in my pending folder.
Yes.
And then when I'm done, I put it in my done folder kind of thing. I could probably do that electronically, and it would be a little bit more environmentally friendly. But I'm kind of a paper guy still.
Well, and you can see the progress you've...
Yeah.
You know, it's a way to see what you've accomplished visually, right?
Yeah, that's true, too.
What do you hope readers take away from the column?
I hope that they're informed on something that they didn't know about before. I hope where I can, you know, get them working a little humor, that they get a little chuckle. And I do have a lot of people tell me that it's one of the first things that they go to. They'll read the front page, and then they'll go see, what question did Father Tom answer this week? So that makes me very happy. And I've even had a guy in the communion line say, your articles in the Messenger are wonderful. That's why I'm saying the body of Christ.
You're like,
saying,
oh,
amen.
Wow.
I'm like, thank you. Move along.
Oh, that's great. But insights have you gained from writing the column?
I learn stuff, too. You know, they say the best way to learn something is to teach it. And so sometimes in the process of this, I will realize, oh, I was wrong about something that I assumed, or I didn't realize that this was a little bit more complicated, or there's this and this and this and this. And so there's all sorts of things that I learn in the process of writing it, too. But I think there's something... useful about that skill of being able to put that on paper, to condense and kind of get your thought out. I think that's just really...
It's really good.
It's difficult work, as you well know, right?
Yeah.
I pace a lot sometimes if there's nobody else in the office. I've got to pace up and down, write a little, type a little, you know, go wash a dish or something like that, come back, type another sentence or so, go refill my coffee. But that's my normal kind of creative process a little bit for
that. But there's really a sense of satisfaction when it comes together, isn't it?
Yeah.
You get to that point where you're just thinking,
Yeah.
And then I'm usually rereading it multiple times before I send it off to you, and there's still a typo or something in there by the time it's
done. We all do that.
I could have read it 18 times and missed it every time.
And this isn't your first column for the Catholic Messenger. You did, years ago, you did the Vocations Corner column.
I did, and I think that was maybe, was that once a month? It wasn't weekly.
I think it was just
once
a month.
I think it was once a month. And so I have written some other things in the past.
So it's quite a bit different, isn't it, when you have to produce once a week? It's kind of like feeding a bear.
Yeah.
The bear's always hungry.
The bear is always hungry, yeah. Well, even with that column, as you probably recall, like sometimes like, oh, wow, that month went by fast. I've already got a vocation column due. This way, actually, I kind of prefer the weekly in the sense that, like I say, you know the bear is always hungry. So you know, I know what I'm doing on Thursday morning unless I have a funeral or something like that. But I'm going to sit down and hammer out my question. You know?
I think it's so cool that you're so committed to it. It's like it's a great asset for the messenger, and I think the readers really enjoy it. I mean, we hear about that.
I enjoy it. I do. And when I'm out of town for something or other, I usually am pretty good about telling you in advance, like, no column next week because I'm gone for this, and I don't want to have to worry about trying to do that. So, you know.
I appreciate that.
Still kind of on my terms a little bit.
Exactly.
But I am happy to continue to do it. That's good.
So I'm wondering, how do you balance the responsibilities? You're leading this large, diverse parish that serves as the Diocese Mother Church with your duties as Vicar General, and then you're writing this column. Yeah. I mean, I see you, I was at Daily Mass on Friday night, and you had just, you know, witnessed a wedding, and I mean, you've got funerals, you've got all of these other things you're doing. How do you make it work?
You do what you got to do day to day, and you just kind of you just make it work. That's what you do, you know. And you try to delegate where you can, and ask for people's help when you need that. But when it comes to a lot of that stuff, that's also it is work. It is draining, but it is also life giving, you know. So I remember exactly. Yeah, it was I think last Saturday where we had a funeral at the cathedral. Then I had an anointing for somebody who had a surgery coming up. We had a funeral. I had a wedding that afternoon. I had a baptism at the wedding or at the 4 o'clock mass. I'd heard confessions before that. So like five sacraments. I'd celebrated pretty much all the sacraments I can celebrate. The only ones that were missing were holy orders and confirmation, and I can do confirmation, but not normally. And so it was like, wow, but that's a good day. That is a good day in ministry. That's a good day in the church for me.
Wow.
So, I mean, I look forward to that. I mean, I think we all need to kind of be aware of our limits and take the time that we need. And that's why sometimes, like I say, if I'm on vacation, I'm on vacation. And
that's
I'm not going to write my column this week.
That's right.
Put something else in that space. But
can you describe the day in the life of Father Tom?
I
imagine every day is a little bit different, but
every day is different. I am kind of a creature of habit in the sense I try to get up kind of around the same time every day. Sometimes depending on how I had the evening before, I might sleep in a little bit, but I'm pretty much getting ready for the day, doing a good chunk of my prayer, trying to do that in the morning. I'm kind of one of these guys, I'm kind of first in, last out of the office a lot of days, and I do most of my work from the cathedral office, because even if it's diocesan business that I'm having to do as Vicar General, I'm doing that by phone or by email or by Zoom, but I do come into the main chancery office at least once a week, probably more likely a couple different times a week for different meetings and things too. But I kind of live by my schedule, which I'm able to set myself, which is nice, and just kind of say, okay, I can do this and this and this. I will confess I'm not always great at I tell people I have a speech impediment when it comes to the word no, that I'm still working on that. And so when, you know, and especially a lot of times it's a good thing, right? They're all good things. So you kind of have to learn to say, okay, this is a good thing, but I just realistically can't do that, you know. But so it might be mass, and then someone coming to see me for, you know, a spiritual direction appointment, or running up to the hospital to see somebody, or, you know, every day can be different. You know, lunch, you know, different. I usually try to eat with the staff when I can or whatever, but sometimes I'm eating like a raccoon over the garbage can, practically, you know, just like grabbing something on the go and get out of there. And then sometimes in the afternoons, again, you know, appointments with people or meetings that are on my schedule as Vicar General. we have alternating evening and morning mass at the cathedral. So my mass schedule really, everything's kind of built around whether I have the morning mass or the evening mass a little bit. A lot of times evenings, we do have meetings at the parish, and so I'm trying to go to as many of those as I can make it to. So some days, some days it can be easily a 12 or 15 hour day, but not every day like that, thank goodness.
Do you get enough sleep?
Oh, yeah. I think I sleep well, so that's good. I think I get enough sleep, and thank God, at least to this point in my life, I sleep pretty soundly, and I've always had good sleep. So
that's good. And then Vicar General, can you describe some of the things you do as a Vicar General?
I kind of tell people it's being in on most of the meetings that the bishop is in on, and to be a sounding board for him and someone that he can ask questions of and say, what do you think about this? And so kind of in an advisory role to the bishop. So that's a lot of it. The not so fun part of it is I get to make the calls that he doesn't want to or thinks like let's. So he might say, why don't you follow up on this first? And so I'll kind of follow up with situations that may happen in a parish or with priests or things like that. And so that's it takes some courage to do that kind of work. And I'm not I don't think I'm completely conflict averse. I wouldn't write this question box if I were completely conflict averse.
Right.
I would just run away from it. But I do enjoy, in a certain extent, meeting challenges and working through problems. But at the same time, some of these things, especially on a human level, it's just hard, right? Those are difficult conversations to have. So a lot of it is dealing a lot with personnel issues or things like that. And then a lot of it is just being in meetings, being informed, trying to inform, and trying to, make pieces work together and things. Sometimes there might be projects that he said, can you really take this over to kind of get that ball rolling? Because I want to, kind of taking his vision to and asking how we can begin to implement that. So.
Well, and you're on a lot of committees as well, and you're working on some major projects even that, there'll be diocesan projects. I guess you just
juggle and balance the best you can.
So what would you say are the challenges and joys of each of those positions?
I think the challenges of the Vicar General position are kind of what I've laid out, having to make some of those difficult phone calls or have those difficult conversations or to deal with some of those things that inevitably come up. The church is messy. Life is messy. Mm-hmm. The world is messy, And so that is probably the more challenging part. The more rewarding part is when you are actually able to put something in place that makes a difference, that has a lasting impact, or you're able to be a part of visioning something, mm-hmm. that's exciting, it's kind of cool to be at the table in some of those.
Yeah.
And then there's other times when I'd be like, I'd rather be somewhere else. But, the parish stuff, that's my bread and butter. I mean, I always kind of, I half joke, like if being a vicar general is the price I have to pay to get to be the pastor of Sacred Heart, it's worth it.
Oh, that's great. So you really enjoy being pastor.
I do. Absolutely.
What are some of the things you enjoy most about being pastor?
I just love interacting with the people, celebrating the sacraments, getting to know them. And it's just, it's a great parish. There's a lot. I mean, every parish I've been to, I feel like is great. And there's great people everywhere. That is absolutely true. So, but it's being the cathedral, it is in, oddly kind of a smallish parish for our diocese.
Oh, okay.
It's not huge. We've got a parish, that's probably four times our size,
Oh, okay.
And so it's a big building and it's the cathedral, but it kind of has a small parish feel to it, which is really kind of cool. And just great people. And of course, because we're the cathedral, we're hosting a lot of other stuff, and it's great to host those diocesan events, chrism mass, ordinations, rite of election, some of those kind of things too, and have a sense of the wider church. And we really try to promote ourselves as a welcoming parish and that we're kind of everybody's church. This is the mother church of the diocese, and this is your cathedral, for anybody, whatever parish they typically attend, this is everybody's parish.
Do you find a lot of people asking for your attention? You've got parishioners, you've got a lot of people. Because you're approachable, you enjoy interacting with people, do you find they want to glom onto you then?
Yeah, no, I do find, I mean, I, and it can kind of go in waves, but gosh, most every night I've got some, if I'm not in a meeting, I'm at somebody's house for dinner or meeting, a lot of those kind of invites or, so, and I try to make room for family and friends as well and that
Great.
But yeah, I do get, I try to accommodate as much as I can within reason, but people are pretty understanding too.
Oh, that's great.
I almost feel badly because they come up to me and say, Father, I know you're so busy, but, and so I know what's coming a little bit. And on the one hand, I'm glad that they still feel comfortable in asking me. I wouldn't want to send off a vibe that says,
right.
Go away. I don't want that at all.
Oh, that's great.
On the other hand, sometimes I want them to listen to themselves a little bit and say,
yeah.
But I like it when people will give me options. And they'll say, I know you are busy, so this is not an urgent thing, but at some point I would like to have a conversation with you about this, or we would love to have you for dinner or something, and then I can say, I would love to do that, and often I will again send me an email or call me at the office when I've got my schedule in front of me, and we can try to figure something out.
And do you have like a favorite form of prayer? I mean, what keeps you charged spiritually?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the liturgy, the hours, is a big part of my day as a priest. Uh-huh. So I'm obligated to pray that. And there are days when I'll admit some days it feels like you're kind of turning pages and reading the words. But then there are days like something will just jump off the page. And kind of hit you between the eyes. And so I like the stability of that.
Uh-huh.
And I like that there's a depth to it if you enter into it, but that kind of gives me the bones of my prayer, I feel like. And then the flesh is probably more in things like I do value quiet time in front of the Blessed Sacrament, time in adoration. We have a lot of hours of adoration at the cathedral, and I have my signed up hour that I'm signed up for weekly, but often I will just kind of pop over there or, in the morning or in the evening or whatever. And so I mean, that kind of quiet, kind of more conversational, more just reflective prayer in front of the Blessed Sacrament is very life-giving for me. So.
I find myself resting in prayer.
Yeah, I find myself doing that sometimes. I figure there's better places to nod off, or worse places to nod off, I should say. But it's interesting. But that tells you something, too. It's like, I'm so at peace here, right?
That's right. I hadn't thought about it that way.
So it might be a good sign, but it might also mean you need to change your posture.
Oh, good point, yeah.
Or, find something to read to jog your prayer a little bit. But
exactly.
I don't bring a pillow into the chapel of the cathedral and set myself up for a nap or anything like that. But sometimes I kind of nod and I'm just saying yes, Lord, yes, Lord.
Yeah, exactly. So. Okay. One last question then. What do you do for fun? What do you do in your downtime?
Sure. The thing I do on a most regular basis would be I have been into playing strategy board games for a very long time. That's really something that goes all the way back to my family, but also my close priest friends. We have found that over the years a great hobby for us because it's social inherently. You get together. It's competitive, but in a healthy way, we get a little chippy with each other once in a while, but not that often, honestly, but it's all fun and we enjoy that. But it's also kind of an intellectual activity and a thinking kind of thing. So it's kind of scratching that itch a little bit of, it's not just vegging out and doing nothing. It is doing something different and it's doing something that takes a little brain power, but is fun. And is ultimately problem solving or, that kind of stuff, but in a way that's relatively inconsequential in the end. So I appreciate that. Things that I do I try to run. I haven't been running for about the last month because I gave myself a good shin splint running a half marathon on Memorial Day, and it's still not quite back to normal. But before that, I was running on a regular basis, and I would like to run at least two or three times a week.
Yeah.
And I'll get back to that once my leg's feeling a little bit better. But, I've made multiple canoe trips up to the Boundary Waters with my family and other friends and enjoy doing that.
Great.
But that's, once every few years, maybe I get to do something like that. But I do like canoeing and camping and being out there. So,
that's awesome.
Even done a little winter camping up there, which was fun.
Ooh.
I would do that one more time at least.
I grew up in Minnesota and do winter camping in northern Minnesota. That That take
my brother and I went 2 years ago in January in northern Minnesota, and the problem was it was too warm.
Oh my gosh!
I'm not kidding, because you know you're carrying the sled behind you with all this stuff, and you're kind of getting sweaty, and then you're getting chilled because of the sweat, you know.
Yeah.
So it's actually in some weird way better when it's like a little colder. But so that's why I think I kind of want to try it again one more time at least.
But, good.
And we weren't out there for very long, but a couple days or whatever. But you're moving, you're making fire, you're making food, or you're sleeping.
Wow.
You're just surviving. But there's something really beautiful about that too, and just like the simplicity of it and the quiet of it, and I just love it.
Sounds terrific. Boy, it's been a pleasure to have you as a conversation partner. Will you come back?
Absolutely. Be happy to.
Awesome.
Be happy to.
Thank you.
Great.
Thanks, Father Tom. We appreciate it.
Keep the questions coming.